So, how to do Christmas for Buddhists? It's an annual presentation that we do this one. Whether we're religious or not, or Buddhist or not, we still have Christmas. It's impossible to avoid. And so, hopefully, today we'll go through some handy hints how to survive Christmas, but also how to just get to what the meaning of Christmas is, like get below all of the consumerism and the tinsel and the pressure to kind of like take it back so that we can really use it on the Dharma path because we can. I mean, it's a profound meaning that goes back millennia. So topics, what we'll have a look at for today, about generosity. So why is generosity important? Why do we even need to practice generosity? The four different types of generosity, which means that we can all practice it even if we don't have stuff. We can still practice big generosity. Some handy hints from the Buddha about how to give presents. So I put this in because you might be all over this, but I really need it spelt out for me, and I found it incredibly helpful to have this is how to do it and this is what not to do. Really nice. And then how giving fits into the six perfections, and also how the COVID conversation fits into the six perfections, because that's an added thing now at Christmas, isn't it? When we all hope to get together as a family, but it can be very fraught. And a little bit about how to best offer our Christmas lights as well. So, does anyone here have Christmas lights? Do you do Christmas lights, Jeanette? Yep. And they're up already. So you're going the European way. They just put them up on Christmas Eve. Early. Right. And Ellie, do you have Christmas lights? No. You may be enthused to have them after this. We have our Christmas lights. Oh, yes, over there in front of Mr. Maitreya. So yes, we can make Christmas part of the causes for enlightenment. So let's just do a little formal motivation for this morning. Settling your posture so that your back is straight. Whether you're sitting on the floor or in a chair, try and make sure that you're sitting well back so that your lower back is supported, and then you can naturally keep the upper portion of your back fairly straight. Pull your chin back and have your head just slightly tilted forward. And a very easy way to find this posture is by imagining a thread of light running from the base of your spine up through your body and coming out the crown of your head. And feel as if you're supported from your crown by this thread of light, as if you were a Christmas bauble, fragile and beautiful, just like this precious human rebirth. So suspended there from your crown, feel all the weight of your body supported. So you might find that your posture naturally becomes more alert, your back straightens a little. And then once the posture's straight, then release any tension from the neck and the shoulders and let your shoulders drop. And just become present in the room where you are. Recognize how fortunate we are to have not just a fairly good human life, considering the lives of humans around the world, but even more than that, a perfect human life with all the ingredients that we need to become enlightened. So amazing and marvelous. So being determined to take this opportunity to take the essence of this human life, to use whatever comes into our path for the benefit of others, for the benefit of enlightenment for all. So including Christmas and New Year and this entire so-called silly season, to be able to transform it onto the path to enlightenment. Because it is there already, then we can use it. And in particular, thinking of everyone that you may be concerned about over this Christmas period, and keeping them in mind too, because our karmic connection with them There is some way that we can benefit them now immediately, but we can also benefit them ultimately in the future by becoming a Buddha for the benefit of all. So with this motivation, then you can gently bring your focus back to the room. Okay. So Christmas and generosity. So we're going to have a look at, well, what's generosity? And the question is generosity more about the intention or the substance? And do you get even what that means? Because unless we spell it out, we kind of just generally think generosity is, you know, having things to give, isn't it? But if we look at the nature of generosity, what it actually is, there's a couple of things. We could, for instance, give a really large amount of money, but with strings attached. So expect to be treated more special than everybody else, or expect to be given a bit of leeway, or expect other things in return, or at least expect gratitude. Usually if we give something, we expect gratitude. And in a way, if we give something and people are rude back to us, it shows us our own expectations, whether we were giving with strings attached or not. So many times, say, if you give to the homeless, they'll be quite rude back to you, and that's a way of them keeping their dignity, but also showing, don't you get too high and mighty there. There's your strings attached right there, expecting gratitude. So, to kind of keep ourselves honest in that way. It can be from really overt to wanting your name up on the building to just that really subtle one. Yeah. How can I be happy getting that money when my dad just died? Yes. It's not the money, is it? It's the associations with it. And also, like, if you get money that comes from something that's been really distressing, it doesn't make you happy. You know, in fact, many people go, I don't want that money because the association is so strong. So again, money is a dependent arising, isn't it? So it's not just the money, it's everything associated with it changes the value of that money. So there's always strings attached. We've just got to be aware of those strings, what they are. On the other hand, giving just, say, a little tiny bit of food to a dog with a kind heart actually is far more meritorious because it's, you know, it's pure and it's genuine. So we kind of, we get that. What this points out, though, is that giving is primarily a state of mind. Giving isn't about the things. And many times we can get quite despondent because we think we can't do anything because we don't have stuff to give. But actually, that's grasping at inheritance. Giving is this attitude of generosity, the wish to give, the intention rather than the substance. So in Buddhism, we achieve all riches by giving things away, which is all summed up in the mandala offering, isn't it? We give away the entire universes of richnesses over and over and over again. So this might seem counterintuitive, but what it does is it creates a substantial cause for riches. If we want riches, we have to create the cause for it. So if we just take stuff off people and rip stuff off them, we may get a short-term gain, but what are we putting in place the causes for? Poverty in the future. And if we want riches, we've got to start by creating the main cause. Generosity is the main thing that makes us successful in everything else. So that's why it's the first of the six perfections, because to ensure that we have success in whatever we do isn't by pushing to make sure that we're, you know, got everything covered and got organized and all of that. To ensure success means we need to have the merit for it to work. How we have the merit is by practicing generosity. So in a way, we can think of it as luck. And without luck or without merit, without a store of fuel in the tank, we can't develop. We don't emotionally develop, spiritually develop, or have success in our practices. So for that, Christmas is the most perfect opportunity, excellent wake-up call to go remind us, oh, yeah, that's right. We need to practice enormous generosity if we want things to turn out well. Luck. Luck is our colloquial way of understanding merit. Merit, fuel in the tank, a store of good karma, the actual, you know, substantial cause, the seeds. How we think of it is luck. You know, things turn out well or things don't. Oh, it was just bad luck. So what does that mean? It means it didn't have the merit. Or things are going well and then they go pear-shaped, the merit ran out. Yeah. So it's kind of good to try and bridge the colloquial understanding that we have with the Dharma, how it fits in. And, of course, even just having a human rebirth, the main cause is morality, but having a perfect human rebirth with resources and time and leisure to come along to Lungri Tumba Centre is morality and generosity. Because most people in the world have no time, do they? They just work themselves to the bone. So I have a little story here from Venerable Gyatso with his inimitable dry style. So he says, many people want to be rich, but if the previous owners of your mind were stingy misers, you would be advised to just give up. Without the karmic potential for wealth, you have no chance whatsoever. And only rarely does karma created in this life ripen in this life. But you may still have a karmic potential for wealth buried somewhere. As a friend of mine said in a lecture to a businessman on how to make money, the first step in making money is to give money away. Even if you have no generosity karma to ripen, your efforts will not be wasted. Your generous actions will become causes for wealth to be experienced by the person who has your mind in the next life. And don't you wish the previous owners of your mind had been a bit more generous? So the benefits of generosity: rebirth into a land with plentiful resources. Here we are. You have a wealth of goods, time, and money. You know, even just the difference between having a safety net, someone that you can call on or not, makes all the difference in your life. You have a good reputation and are liked by all. The good and the wise follow you, and you are confident and untroubled in company. So all things that we naturally yearn for. So let's have a look then at the four types of generosity. Does anyone remember what they are? There's hints up here. See if you can guess what they are. Four types of generosity. From the heart, so what kind of generosity would that be? Love, that's right, love, yep, what else? The first one with the box, right, that's giving stuff, materials, giving presents, things, donating food, money, medicine, they're the big ones. Also volunteering, planning for the future and making a will, which is where you get to practice giving things away, but you're also giving your family peace of mind because they don't have to go through everything when you're dead. Giving blood, for instance, is also an extraordinary thing to be able to do. It's like a bodhisattva activity, you know, giving your body. And we have all of the resources now to be able to do that. So this is what Geshe Tekchok from Transforming the Heart says about this one, the generosity of giving material possessions. This includes giving food, money, medicine, and even our own body. However, until we reach a certain level on the path, we're not allowed to give our body. So, you know, if we're going to give it and it's going to distress us, we're not allowed to. When we're properly prepared and there is a real need, then it's appropriate to give it. At present, we can give our body by using it to serve others. So that's like giving our time. But also any kind of, you know, like organ donations or giving blood or the platelets or anything like that is an amazing thing to give. So I'm really happy that this year, you know, how with all of our puja offerings now, we give them all to the homeless shelters and the community kitchens, pantries and things like that. So we're having our main big puja offering shop for this Saturday so that it can all go to the community pantries before Christmas rather than on Christmas Eve. We'll just have a few things. But that's the big one, isn't it, where people get really really desperate. So even with that, you know, it's really nice that we can make the merit by making the offerings, and then the blessed offerings can go on further to help with the material necessities. The next one, love. So you're right, Jeanette, that's right. So love, looking out for our neighbours, you know, with kindness and care. Being patient. How we be patient is by remembering that we care about the person and we wish them to be happy. Then patience comes. Setting our motivation. So before we leave the house, reminding ourselves what our motivation is, a motivation of kindness for others, wishing them all the best, which actually is supposed to be the sentiments of the season. And when you're giving your Christmas cards, you know, personalising them, like putting in a comment that shows you've thought about the person. It makes a huge difference. I mean, in a way, you know, we have this real need to be seen and acknowledged as human beings, and that is actually one of the prides. But you can cut below that by actually seeing and acknowledging a fellow living being. So without indulging in the prides and actually just, you know, recognizing there is another samsaric suffering being there who you wish all the best for, and then expressing it in as much detail as you can so that they really feel it. Yeah, that's right. And even just writing it with your own hand, you know, it makes a big difference. Yep. So the generosity of giving love includes thinking, may others be happy. It's that simple. You just think it. You have it as your attitude, as well as actually caring for them. It's important for us not to get so absorbed in the abstract concept of all suffering mother sentient beings that we ignore those around us. We should be warm and take care of those in our immediate environment as much as we can. So we start from where we are, radiating outwards, that care for those immediately around us, family, neighbours, workmates, and then outwards. The next one, giving fearlessness. So giving fearlessness principally refers to saving the lives of others and freeing them from fearful situations. So what we can do in our society is all those things, you know, from Oxfam and whatever, where you buy a card and the money goes to giving a goat to a, you know, a family, or a stove or a well for the village. All of that goes to saving lives. So I know Venerable Trinley does those cards every year, and it's just such a kick to get a card like that because it's a really meaningful thing. And I think it's also a skillful means that if you've got a large family and you just give everybody those kind of Oxfam cards, even if they're disappointed that they didn't get stuff from you, you know, grandma, they can't complain about it. You have to, you know, they're shamed into going, oh, thank you very much. You can also give fearlessness by going vegetarian. So you can go vegetarian on just the precepts days or the holy days, because they're where the merit is multiplied. So even if you don't want to be vegetarian for the whole time, you do it on those special merit multiplying days. You go vegetarian and you offer that 24 hours of being vegetarian, which is saving lives, you know, indirectly, but it's still contributing. You offer that for the health and long life of our holy gurus. So it's a really wonderful practice to do. It's a lot more than just vegetarian, which is just for this life. It's the big picture. You can dedicate the merit to all the animals. You can dedicate for the health and long life of our gurus. And in fact, you can do that. This is how I gave up smoking, that someone said to me when I wanted to give up, oh, if you really meant it, you'd make a promise to Lama Zopa Rinpoche and offer you giving up smoking to Rinpoche for his long life. And I was so shocked because it brought it home. Instead of like, oh, la, 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 I really want to give up smoking, he's like, oh, my God, this is serious. I got to do it now. That's right, that's right. So it took me about 2 weeks to get my head around it, and then I gave up smoking and I offered it to Rinpoche for his whole long life. And it worked, of course. It worked so strongly that about a year later I had a dream where I was smoking a cigarette and I was so shocked I woke myself up going, no! Okay, so also boycotting bad products. You know, boycotting products, cancel culture has a big effect, and we can use that for any products that are dangerous or that are, you know, from, you know, slave labor or anything like that. What we do, even though it's indirect, it has an effect. So, Jeanette, you dedicate that 6 weeks that you gave up chocolate for. No, you can do it now. You can still dedicate and retrospect, and you dedicate for the big things. So by doing this, may all those beings be free now and into the future. May they achieve the ultimate liberation, nirvana. May I achieve liberation too and enlightenment and lead all beings out of suffering. So you dedicate it, so it seals it. And so if we think that on purpose we're offering fearlessness and we just go, say, week by week or day by day, you set yourself a limit so that at the end of it you go, ta-da, and dedicate, then it won't peter out like that. Or month by month, you know, if there's something that you have a regular celebration about. And, of course, fearlessness, having an orphan's Christmas for all those people that are bereft and alone at Christmas, invite them over. Giving fearlessness also includes looking after refugees, you know, people in financial stress, especially now with COVID, that kind of thing, to offer safety, you know, physical as well as emotional from anxiety. And the last one, giving the Dharma. This is a big one. Sharing your time and your wisdom, your own personal insights. Sharing good books like our amazing street library that's had between 300 and 400 books be distributed out to the community so far. I mean, it's just wonderful. And in particular, at Christmas, the rate of suicide goes up every year. So to really be mindful of when people are suicidal and to listen to that quiet voice that you have inside, you know, when you have a little thought, oh, you know, I wonder if they're okay, and then the thought goes again, the quiet voice, really listen out for it and make the extra effort to contact them or to ask them if they're okay. Because pretty much at Christmas, that's when people tip over. So the generosity of giving Dharma means sharing the Dharma with others by giving teachings or initiations, for example. The generosity of giving Dharma must be practiced with a motivation that's not mixed with the disturbing attitudes. That is, we must take care not to wish for money, appreciation, or reputation in return. The more pure our motivation, the more it is solely to benefit others, the more effective our gift of Dharma will be. When we become an Arya, any teaching we give will be of great benefit to others. We can also give the Dharma in unassuming ways, such as by helping a person with problems by explaining the Dharma perspective to them without using any Buddhist words. For example, if your friend is suffering from anger, we can explain how to look at the situation from a different perspective. And we can give the Dharma by reciting our prayers out loud so that the animals and insects in the area hear them. So that blesses the whole environment, your garden, you know, all the seen and unseen. So giving the Dharma is a big one, and it's something that we can all do, because even if we can't give teachings and initiations, we have our own experience from the Dharma that we can share. And that's what makes a difference, isn't it? When someone, you know, when we're troubled and there's somebody else that says, I've been through it and I can assure you, you know, this, it's going to be okay. This is what helped me. The personal thing matters so much more than just reading it in a book. So even if you do give a book, then you've got to explain why or how it helped you, so it's personalized. So out of these four types of generosity, what do you think's the most important one? Dharma, what do you reckon, Jeanette? Even Dharma or love? Yeah. Yes, so the Dharma, in fact, we can inform all of them, can't it? What it should do is give us confidence that only one of these really involves giving material things. The rest of it really is generosity. It's an activity of the heart, the mind. Okay, so let's look now at the substance of gifts, actually what to give. Because, you know, our resources are limited at the moment, of course, and we want to make sure that we give a good gift. So first off, got to be honestly acquired. So whatever we give isn't from force or coercion. It's not from stealing, you know, flowers from the neighbor's garden or, you know, picking up someone else's Christmas lights from their yard and putting them in yours or whatever it is. So clearly, honestly acquired is a good one. Offer the best that you have. So not just the leftovers or the junk. I remember an ad on TV quite a few years ago where they had, I think it was an ad because people kept on just donating broken things to op shops. And so they just had like broken tennis rackets and all of it and broke, busted up shoes and giving it as presents, Christmas presents. And everyone's looking and going, what? Saying, well, if you wouldn't give it to your family, don't give it to the op shop. No, no, they don't. So then people just leave all their broken rubbish at the door and it gets rained on and soggy. And so then also give what you can, but aspire to give more. So this is an important mental attitude, that we have to be honest with what we can actually give and know our temporary limitations. And if we know that the limitations are just with the substance, our aspiration can always be big. But usually what happens is we get so fixated on the stuff, we think, I've got nothing to give. We're so upset about it, we go, I don't want to give anything anyway. We kind of just shut down the aspiration. So the thing is to just give what you can, even if it's small, and keep a big aspiration. Never lose that. But often what we find is it's too painful. We start going over to the external, the things, you know, the objects, find that we're limited and then can't bear that we're limited and then go, oh, well, I didn't want to give that anyway to, you know, save our emotions. So always keep that aspiration, the wish to be able to give far, far, far more. And that means if we're aware of that aspiration, it also means that we're not going to overextend ourselves, because especially here at Langri Tumba Centre, I see many people who are really generous and they give and then I know that they're in difficulty and I've had to say, no, no, half that, no, take that away. That's okay. There's the intention. That's good. Now, not that much. Give just a little more that's comfortable. So what you do is you go, it's like with investing, you know, you invest what you can afford to lose. So you go, what can I comfortably give, really easily give? Doesn't matter if they appreciate it or if they break it straight away, what can I comfortably give? And then just the tiniest little bit more. That's how to do it. So you're just stretching a little bit, but not huge. It's very practical. We've got to give so that if everything goes wrong, we don't regret giving. So that's a real no-no. To regret our generosity is actually far worse than just not giving anything at all, because it's regretting our virtue. So how to make sure that we don't regret our generosity is to be very pragmatic in the practice of it. Have that big-hearted attitude and then in practice, bit by bit. Then don't give inappropriate things or dangerous things. Can you think of what's an inappropriate thing? A gun. A gun, that's right, that's inappropriate. And I would say also toy pistols to kids is inappropriate. Give them little flowers that squirt water instead. Like, what are we teaching them to do? A chainsaw's great. Yes, it's like this is the sword that cuts through delusion. Manjushri's sword is totally different from a gun. Chainsaw's excellent. Oh, I know, but that's because you watch far too many horror movies. No, chainsaws, just think it's the wisdom. So you think it's cutting through delusion. This is like, whoa, wrathful black Manjushri business. Another inappropriate thing would be like a beer, wine, spirits voucher to a nun. Or online shopping vouchers to shopaholics, you know, so being careful. Giving a bus voucher to a nun's a good one, or a petrol voucher. Also, don't hinder others from giving or cause them to regret their generosity. So even if we disagree. So sometimes people will donate money to a church or they'll donate or whatever and the relatives will go, oh, why did you give money to them? So that to be really careful about that, even if you disagree. The actual motivation to give is something to be commended, even if who they've given it to you're not. Well, that's right. So inappropriate things, it may be more skillful to give food vouchers rather than money to an alcoholic, but they will not be impressed with you. You know, or Woolies vouchers, though I think in some states Woolies, you know, has the Bottle-O incorporated into it. Paying the bills is a great one, actually. So, yes, because you're not feeding the problem then. Paying a bill also, because what you're doing then is relieving stress. You're not contributing to the dysfunctional situation. You're alleviating the dysfunctional situation. So something like that. Or, yeah, giving a food voucher, giving clothes, getting the lawn done, you know, things that life maintenance are very hard to organise. Yeah, so even people that are asking for money, I mean, you can give them money and you give it without strings attached and then help them to be honest by saying, I don't care what you use it for, I'm giving you the money, because they'll say, oh, I need it for bus fare, and you go, I don't care what you use it for, I'm just purely giving you the money. So it becomes a pure interaction. Or you can say, come and I'll buy you a cup of coffee. Yeah. Come on, let's go. Yeah, if you've got the time. Yeah. Or even just to take them to a place and give the money to the counter and go, see you later. So a good Dharma practitioner, this is something to remember, is free from stinginess, delights in sharing, and spontaneously helps others. At which point I hang my head in shame, because that, you know, it's a simple sentence, but it's so hard to live up to. But this is the mark of a good Dharma practitioner, free from stinginess. And you'll see that with the lamas, you know. I just remember a birthday party that we held for Geshe Tashi Seren years ago. And, you know, it was a big cake. They cut it up. They gave him the biggest slice. And immediately he cut the slice into pieces and offered it around to everybody before even sitting down. Like, it was just part of his very being. That in itself, like, stay with me forever, that one. So then who do we offer to? The three fields, the fields of enlightenment, merit, and mercy. So these are the spheres of most importance that to make sure that we offer to, that we've got to honour and cultivate. And they are actually instinctively who we focus on at Christmas. So the first field, the field of enlightenment, the three rare sublime ones, the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. Or, you know, if you're Christian, to Jesus Christ, to Our Lady, the Saviour, whatever saints, you know, give to the church. The field of enlightenment, our refuge, is who we spontaneously want to offer to. You know, Christians have the midnight mass. I used to go to midnight mass with Pearlie on Christmas Eve, and we go to Pooja at Lunnery Thomas Centre and then off onto midnight mass up at Red Hill. So also, if you have a Christmas tree, that's your mandala. You offer that. You offer it to the three jewels. It's brilliant. And it's so beautiful. It's ephemeral. You know, it's actually quite a pure offering, because physically it doesn't mean anything. So it's all mental. So you offer your Christmas tree, the lights, the baubles. You offer all the food. Make sure you offer at Christmas dinner that you offer to the three rare sublime ones. Otherwise, Christmas dinner just becomes a cause for samsara. All that money, just ends up in the toilet. All that effort. So you put all of that effort and the expectation and everything into Christmas dinner, at least offer it to the three rare sublime ones. And if you have a mixed family, religious, non-religious, Christian, Buddhist, then at least do a peace blessing. At least say, by us eating here today, may we create harmony. May this harmony spread throughout the whole world. Yeah. But do you share it with everybody? Yes. Yeah, so that's right. So you say it, but you share it with everybody else. It also makes the Christmas dinner more worthwhile, because otherwise a Christmas dinner can be quite fraught, can't it? So this way it sets it in a good direction. It becomes a meaningful thing. Field of merit. So primarily your benefactors, your mother and father, your teachers, your guru, benefactors, people who've lent you money, sponsored you, helped you out, taught you to read, all of those. So that's the field of merit. So they're the ones that are karmically very close to us, and our life, the success of our life has been due to their kindness. So it's really important that we acknowledge them. Even if we have a fraught relationship, you know, some kind of acknowledgement is kind of important. And the last one, the field of mercy. So the vulnerable, the sick, those who are in hospital, who are ill, the old, the aging and frail, the vulnerable physically or emotionally, the homeless, of which there are more and more and more, all the poor animals that get slaughtered for Christmas dinner, or the exploited. So there's many ways that we can give to the field of mercy. But again, you know, Boxing Day, it's built in, isn't it? I used to think Boxing Day was everyone goes to the boxing match. I thought, why do they have boxing at Christmas? But no, that's what Boxing Day is. It's to give to the field of mercy. So there, to make sure that we offer to those three, for us, has incredible benefit. Okay, so then five things that make a gift good, and then five timely gifts. So this comes from the sayings of the Buddha, and the Buddha said, okay, these are the five things that make one's gift good. What five? One gives with reverence, one gives thoughtfully, one gives with his own hand, one gives things that are good, and one gives thinking of the result. So giving with reverence means that we give with respect and not haughtiness, especially to the less fortunate. So this is like, yeah, to the homeless or the dirty, the great unwashed or whatever, that we give with real respect. So we take Lungri Tungpa's, you know, teaching to heart and put ourselves lower than others. How wonderful to be able to serve you and give you this thing. If we're really good, we can think of everybody as a manifestation of our guru, and whoever we give things to, we think of as our guru. Then we'll be really respectful. So, you know, if we set our motivation first, then we can ensure that the gift that we give is good. And so what normally happens at Christmas is we get frazzled, we forget because we don't set our motivation, and we forget about these five things. So if you do have a house full of relatives and it's really, really stressful, you just think of them all as manifestations of your guru, putting on all different guises to give you all different little life lessons. But that way you can kind of keep your heart open and keep your patience going, things like that. Give thoughtfully. So that's trying to make the gift relevant to them. So there's all those cliches where the husband gives the wife a lawnmower or a, you know, a set of tools or whatever. Or you just get socks and jocks, which when you're old is great, when you're young is horrible. So try and by thinking through the gift, it demonstrates that you care. What else? Oh, that's right. So a school told me, Catherine at her school, she said that they have a secret Santa at school and that the kids have to bring a gift to give to St. Vinny's before they can give a gift to anyone at school. So that's nicely thought out, isn't it? So skillful kind of. Yes, well, if the guy buys the wife an iron, that's she can just sit on there and watch him do it. give with one's own hand. So that means you personally give the gift. You don't go, oh, you know, Ellie, when you're over there, by the way, can you just give this to so-and-so? Get somebody else to do it. Actually, if you give the gift personally, it really shows that you care. It's like really important things, the person comes and, you know, tells you personally. And also then in Japan, you know, they make sure they give gifts with both hands. They give everything with both hands. They even give you your change, the dollar notes with both hands. As it's just like this kind of respect built in. If you can give it rather than post it, you know, do so. If you can give it yourself rather than get somebody else to do it. As much as you can. And if you do have to post it, then you personalize it. Oh, it's quite tricky now, isn't it? You can buy things online and just get it sent straight to the person. So if you do that, you better send an email as well saying, hello. Give good things, not leftovers. Don't, you know, buy an assorted bunch of cookies, keep the best cookies for yourself, and give everyone the ones you don't like. And don't give anything poisonous, like poisonous flowers, for instance. Don't give weapons or knives. So there is, for instance, an old wives' tale about this, of how if you're going to give knives, you actually get the person to give you a dollar, so they've bought them off you. You haven't given it, because if you give weapons or knives or scissors, it's like severing the relationship. So you don't want to do that. So you buy it off them, and it's based in this kind of truth of a karmic interaction. And there was one time when someone actually offered to sharpen all the knives at Lungri Tumpa Center, and they did, and then they stopped coming to Lungri Tumpa Center. And I offered to pay them a dollar for sharpening all the knives. They went, no, 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 no. But it was this karmic thing of just severing the relationship. So careful with what we give. And give thinking of the result, so the big picture. So if you're not Buddhist, then at least thinking of the benefit to society of all sentient beings, a long-term benefit of that gift. So many people set up things like giving online courses or online experiences during COVID, or paying someone's uni fees or tutoring fees, or giving them a, you know, piano accordion online class or whatever it is, giving experiences. Of course, giving thinking of the result is, from our point of view, is bodhicitta motivation, that we're giving this. Yeah, for the short term, it's Christmas, but the main reason is practicing generosity for the purpose of accumulating all of the merit to become a Buddha for the sake of all sentient beings. That's the main reason. If we forget that, then all of our giving is just done with worldly concern, and it will just create more samsara. There's also a great story I'll tell you about giving, thinking of the result, but in terms of worldly things. So a couple of ones. One is that Chow Yun-fat, the amazing martial arts actor, I think it's him, he just gave $721 million to charity because he's Buddhist, and he said, it's not my money. So that's a pretty amazing thing. Keanu Reeves is a bit like that too. And George Clooney. So this story from George Clooney, Christmas 2017, He gave $1 million to each of his 14 friends. So he invited them all over, and they were all, you know, struggling actors at the same time, but George Clooney made it big and the others not so. So he gave them all $1 million for Christmas as a present. He gave it in cash and with the bodyguards too, rather than a check. And he said, if you don't take it, then nobody gets it. So then that way no one could get all embarrassed. Isn't that, now that's thinking it through. And, you know, an acknowledgement of, hey, you know, we're all buddies. Okay, five timely gifts. These are the five timely gifts. What five? One gives to the one who's just arrived, to one who's leaving, to the sick, to the hungry, and the first fruits of the field and orchard one gives to the virtuous. So timely gifts, when to give. To those who've just arrived, so refugees, overseas visitors, interstate visitors, baby showers. It's important. You know, we're marking special occasions, and there are occasions where people are vulnerable, emotional, at risk. So to those who've just arrived, to those who are leaving to go overseas, or leaving home, leaving school, finishing school, or leaving a relationship, the big transitions of life. Giving to the sick, those who are in hospital, even just dropping off chicken soup or lem sip to someone with a cold or the flu, giving to various appeals, cancer appeals and things like that. And, you know, don't the bikies have that toy run that they do for the kiddies with cancer? I mean, that's really great. Yeah. So a lot of these things we have built into our society, but it's because they are fundamentally, it's like a, you know, it's a universal kind of recognised thing to do. The big tough blokes with their little fluffy toys, I know, it is fantastic. In fact, it makes it even better, doesn't it? Give to the hungry, the homeless, the destitute, stray animals, sick animals, and give the first fruits to the virtuous. So those who look after others, so the virtuous, the gurus, our holy gurus, but also school teachers. You know, there's that tradition of kiddies giving to school teachers at the end of year, giving to the monks and the nuns at the end of year on holy days. To any of those who look after others, so the first responders, the health workers, you know. The kind of things that we can give, the best cookies, the first edition of whatever books, dedicating special events. We've got our wishing tree for the Sangha, you know, getting a bauble, all of those things. So anything that you're also producing, so if you're sponsoring a book, you give the first, you know, number one to the guru, or if you've got a run of pictures, you give the number one away so that you give that first fruit. It's like offering the first mouthful. It's exactly it. So that's what makes the gifts timely. Then how generosity then fits into the six perfections, because as we know, the six perfections are all together. Because as we've seen, generosity is mostly a mental activity or an activity of the heart. Our motivation is really important. So it's best that it's not just ordinary generosity, which is good, but it won't last. It's got to be the perfection of generosity. So it's got to be informed by bodhicitta, have that really big vision. If it's worldly generosity, it will only last as long as the world, as long as that action. You know, if Christmas dinner is just given because you love your friends and you're giving Christmas dinner, it's going to last as long as Christmas dinner does, maybe as long as the friendship does, but that's it, it's finished. And within that, it can also create causes for suffering. So we've got to make sure that we bring it up a level, to always bring in this bodhicitta motivation. So this also is like a how to keep yourself nice checklist as well, especially for Christmas. So in terms of ethics, if we keep our focus on others, protecting others, benefiting others, it will help us stay calm, because we start getting frazzled when it all becomes all about me. And it's where the focus has gone from how can we share with others to how can I share with others. So, for instance, the way to stay calm cooking Christmas dinner is to think, who's the dinner for? It's for the others. Whatever I do, it's going to be for the others. Doesn't, if it turns out bad, if it could have been better, all of that doesn't matter. It's about actually giving this nice, you know, actually giving love is what it is. Then our expectations won't get out of control. So this one, it's a real rule of thumb that if our expectations are out of control, we start feeling ourselves getting tight, stressed, frazzled, it's because our focus has degenerated and it's come back to me, or it's come back to grasping at inheritance. The most important thing is the perfect dinner rather than the love at the dinner. We tend to always fall back onto those things, kind of that the grasping at inherent things, the external objects. It's a natural thing for us to do. So we've got to remind ourselves, yes, that's a good result. You can have a marriage where it rains, everybody gets saturated, but it can be a bonding experience. But if the bride loses it, it's not. So, I mean, with Christmas dinner, years ago, I served a dinner and gave everybody food poisoning, like salmonella, which is notifiable disease. The governor general, the state, whatever governor general is notified, you can't go into places that sell food for 2 weeks. It's like it's a serious thing. So it was this wonderful dinner, had all of this really expensive champagne, and the six of us spent the entire evening rolling around on my front lawn, vomiting, drinking champagne. It was a bad dinner, but it was a bonding experience. And after that, my friends started bringing me food. And without them, I would have died of malnutrition. In fact, because my nutrition was so bad, I had goiter, which is like an old people's third world disease. I was 21, I had goiter. So I could not look after myself. So after this, everybody realized that and then started bringing me food regularly and looking after me. And like it was a very strong bonding experience, but I don't recommend it. Okay, so now patience. Especially if someone continuously asks for more. So at Christmas time, because it's all about, you know, giving, then it's people start thinking about receiving and what it means and how much others love me and all of this stuff. Neediness comes out. And what do we do when people are needy? We shrink away. It's so awful. So to be aware of that, those needy people, with those that keep on asking for more where it's never enough, just go that extra mile and give them more love, more attention, but really cut to what they need, which isn't more stuff. They need your pure love. Some people need more love than others. That's right. They need it said. They need it demonstrated. They need it proven. They need a whole dramatic thing to appear in their mind to believe it. And so that is a way of practicing generosity. How do we do it with patience? We remember they're not in control. You know, they're not getting what they want. They're suffering beings. They're overwhelmed with their neediness, disturbing emotions. They're hungry ghosts, especially coming up to Christmas, so much so. And also little kitties get all into that frazzled thing too. So, yeah, so that's when instead of recoiling, it's like you go down a gear. So if we just think, you know, with the difficult people, instead of recoiling, actually doing the opposite and embracing them. going, now is the time for me to give to these people, to give my time, my energy, my love, my attention. And I think if you do it, and if you do it unadulterated without any resentment, they will feel it and it will land. Where it doesn't land is where you're kind of giving it, but you're also trying to get away at the same time, and people know that, so then they need more. So just 100% unadulterated. Yeah, that's right. So you either give or if you have conditions, they're really, really upfront. So that's that thing where you have the aspiration to give. Oh, I'll give you 40. So that's the aspiration, but you're not being honest with yourself that you can afford to lose 40. So then when it doesn't come back, when the loan doesn't come back, even though it's really clear, I don't know if I can pay you back, then there's resentment. So that comes from our side and not being honest with ourselves of what we can comfortably give. So if we can comfortably give 20, but we have the aspiration, I want to give 40, but that's just an aspiration. And we've kind of got that cognitive fusion that's married the aspiration that we have with our financial resources. And that's a mistake. So then normally what happens, you go, oh, that's it, I'm not lending people money anymore, which is wrong, because now we've given up our aspiration. So the better thing is to go, look, I'll give you 10 bucks, have it. It's tricky, isn't it? Joyous effort. So to remember to take satisfaction in fulfilling the wishes of others rather than focusing on the details. So that's in particular about, you know, forget about whether the broccoli turned out perfect or not. Stop obsessing about the Brussels sprouts and actually just think about, we're sharing a meal together to create harmony. Nothing is perfect in samsara, including Christmas dinner. So we can forget about that and just have the joyous effort of you know, the generosity without fixating on it being perfect. The other thing with joyous effort is, of course, when we give, then our own happiness grows. So it is a nice thing to do. When we give things away, we actually double our happiness, because we see their happiness, then we're happy. The effort part of things is to get some strategies together before Christmas dinner, before the Christmas get-togethers, of what you're going to talk about at Christmas. So because a lot of what we talk about is rubbish, because there's a taboo subjects that can't be mentioned in the family. So you've got to find a middle way there that you can talk about something that is meaningful but isn't incendiary. So I think I mentioned some of these last week. So for instance, you can go around the table and ask everyone, what's your favourite movie of the year and why did you like it? And see, then that way people that don't normally talk will talk. People that talk too much will have to listen. And it's a nice way of people sharing what matters to them without it being too personal. You can also do something, say, for New Year or Christmas. What are the three best things that happened to you this year? And see, that's a way of rejoicing, because normally we end up complaining about everything. There's always things to complain about. That just, it's toxic. So Christmas, and it's coming towards the end of the year. If we rejoice in the three things that happened to us, or three things that we did that we're really happy about, it's a way of creating merit, because you're rejoicing about it. You could do what you're looking forward to next year, but again, that's a bit dicey. The better one is to try and bring in the gratitude or the rejoicing. So that's kind of the effort part. Have them up your sleeve. Have it written on a cue card under the table so that when you go blank, you go, oh, yeah, that's right, and get it set off in the right direction to start with. So that's where concentration comes in, to remember to do this. As you're walking in the door, you might forget all of this. So you have to be pre-prepared. Be mindful. Remember your plan. Notice the opportunities where you can help others, where you can step in on the conversation. Even if you have a thing like as you're getting out of the car and before you go in the door, that you go, now Miffy, now Jeanette, what are the most important things I have to remember today? It's not, do I take the turkey out of the oven? It's, no matter what, I'm not going to lose my top on anybody. I'm not going to gossip. And what I'm going to talk about instead is blah, blah, blah. The main thing is harmony in the family. Everything else is secondary. So if you just go duk, 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 before everybody arrives or before you, between getting out of the car and going to the door, it'll be okay. That's where concentration comes in. And then the wisdom, remember interdependence, the gift, the giver and the recipient, we're all dependent on each other. We need others to be able to practice generosity. All three are equally important. You, the gift and the recipient are equally important in the equation. So that way it guards against pride. It also means we fully appreciate ourselves, the gift and the recipient. Without Christmas, we wouldn't be focusing on generosity. We'd be missing huge opportunity. And the wisdom also, I think, is that one of, not fixating on the details, which is going back out into this, the inherent existence or the things out there, forgetting the big picture, which is what's happening in our mind, in our heart. So who knew you could have Christmas dinner and practice all six perfections and then, dedicate. You can do your little stealth Dharma dedication that, by coming together like this, may we be a harmonious, strong, wonderful family, create harmony in the world, be a force of good for humanity, at least never harm. Now let's have a wonderful time together. In your mind, you can be thinking this is all part of the path to enlightenment. So for all sentient beings, enlightenment for all sentient beings means we have to practice on some sentient beings. Here they are now at dinner. Great. Yeah, that's right. So when they get drunk, then you've got to remember all of these too. That's right. Because they're just drunk on alcohol, but all sentient beings are drunk on samsara. It's just some are more obvious than others. Then a little thing about light offerings. So I love Christmas. I love Christmas trees. I love seeing all the lights. Even on the bus, there's some amazing ones on Old Cleveland Road. Fairy lights around everywhere. Oh, and then if they have fireworks as well. So all of this, it's like everybody's put such effort into these light offerings. In the prayer where it says, and I offer those, both actually and mentally. And all the Christmas markets, all of that. So all of this beauty and sparkle is out there. They're actual offerings. Now, they're all just offering pretty much to samsara, creating samsara. But if they're all out there already organized for us, we can offer them. We can offer them to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas on behalf of all sentient beings for everybody's full blossoming of their wisdom, for full enlightenment. So then it becomes meritorious. You can offer on behalf of others and also their actual things there, so why not offer them? So make sure that all those lights do not become a cause for samsara, but a cause for enlightenment. Until we offer them, they are a cause for samsara. They're not just neutral. They're just creating more suffering. Yes, so may all beings who see the light, may their joy be the joy of enlightenment. May their minds be illuminated. But by me offering these lights to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, may all sentient beings' minds be illuminated, hearts be freed. So you offer all those lights. If we do, the benefits of offering light, you yourself become like a light in the world. You know, you become reliable, a beacon in your family, able to help others, illuminate the minds of others. You become like a light in the world, an inspiration. You receive much wealth and enjoyments. You receive the wisdom of knowing right from wrong. Now, I don't know about you, but oh boy, I want that wisdom, because things are not necessarily apparent to me. And so many times I go, oh, what should I do here? Should I do this or should I do that? What do I do? So by offering light, you know what to do. Offering light is also a cause for having a long life. And you eliminate the darkness of ignorance and confusion, especially the concept of true existence. So this is the great irony of Christmas, isn't it? That in a way it can draw us right into the material, the grasping at inheritance and all of that angst and craving, grasping and arguments. And at the same time, it has this potential that if we offer the light, it can actually release us from this concept of true existence. So for the lights, we could say, by offering these lights, may I become like a light in the world. May I achieve the perfection of generosity and lead all beings to enlightenment. Or may all beings find the light of the Dharma, follow their inner wisdom, especially the world leaders and the powerful, and may they rule wisely and compassionately. So we can do dedications for those in power. Dedication for the Christmas dinner as well. May everyone experience the spiritual nourishment of the Dharma. May all beings who contributed to this dinner attain enlightenment. May the energy from this food always benefit and never harm. So this little turning Christmas tree is great because the lights go on and off, so it's like they're continuously being offered. Self-lighting Christmas trees, I mean, they're my ultimate at the moment. Oh, no, I miss our big Christmas trees, Jeanette. I'm glad you remember them. Yeah, that's I do. I thought I'd lost half the baubles, but they're stashed under the stage. Yeah, I kind of ran out of energy. I've been so tired for the last few years, and I just thought I really want to get enough energy back to have that Christmas tree again and have it as an offering, because it was so nice, wasn't it? So I will. I'm working my way towards it, Jeanette. And this is why I love Christmas trees so much, because they're so akin to wish-fulfilling trees. The trees full of wish-fulfilling jewels. You know, they're so incredibly similar. And to me, I think there is a real poignancy with Christmas baubles, because they're beautiful and they're fragile. And that's like our human life. You know, and there's something about making an offering like that brings it into awareness. And plus, of course, there's the whole background, the pagan background of, you know, the transition from the darkness on the winter solstice into the light, the rebirth. Then there's also a bit after the pagan thing, the whole thing it's not St. Nicholas, it's before St. Nicholas, the scary Father Christmas. I can't remember the name of them now. Krampus. You remember? So Krampus is like a karmic reckoning, and he'd come and he'd check, you know, if you've been good or if you've been bad. And it was a terrifying thing. So this was like at the end of the year, your karmic reckoning as kiddies. It's like a pagan thing. Very, very. So that was before Father Christmas or St. Nicholas. Krampus, look him up. Terrifying. Looks like a goat devil with a sack full of kiddies on his back. So he was the original Father Christmas. Yes, that's right. Like the deities, like a protector, the wrathful protectors that tap you on the shoulder and make you think, have I been good or bad? Because that reckoning is coming. So there is a whole lot built in there, that is richness of this time that is there, why it's such a still such a powerful time despite all of the consumerism layered on top. And then, of course, then we had the whole Christian story. So, you know, the nativity, when you hear about, from a Buddhist point of view, you know, when a great being is born, there is a star in the sky that shows where the great being is. You know, it's the birth story of great beings is very similar. You know, the sacred star showed that a great event was going to take place because it was there for several months beforehand. And then the wise men, the ones in the know, went, something big is happening. I'm going. I'm going there and I'm taking offerings because this is important. They knew. There was a miraculous birth accompanied by a heavenly host surrounded by all the animals of peace. You know, in terms of the birth of a great being, this is an archetypal story. And very similar to the birth of the Buddha. You know, the Buddha, when he was first born, he took those first five steps and out of the earth just spontaneously manifested lotus flowers of the, seven steps. There was a heavenly host of devas that poured down nectar onto the Buddha when he was first born. And he proclaimed this incredible saying. They say he proclaimed with the voice of a lion's roar, I am the highest in the universe. I'm the best in the universe. I am the foremost in the universe. This is my last rebirth. I shall be born no more. So that's kind of like, this is showing the 12 deeds, how to be free of samsara, no more uncontrolled rebirth. And then a great immeasurable light filled the entire universe and all its world systems trembled and quaked. So, you know, even when we look at Christmas from the pagan time and then Krampus and then St. Nicholas and then, you know, the birth of Jesus, St. Nicholas, all the way to now, we can find the parallels with the Buddha's life as well. Krampus, K-R-A-M-P-U-S. Just Google images for it and you'll get an idea. They are, that's right. And with the wrathful deities in particular, so they are only wrathful, they're scary to our delusions, to our good self, to our virtues. They're a relief, they're our protectors. So that's the beautiful thing. It's like, you know, when you get told ghost stories, there's that deliciousness because you're there safe hearing about this scary thing. So a similar kind of thing with the protectors. Who are they scary to? The self-cherishing, self-grasping. That's who's terrified and runs screaming from the room. Who's left? All of your virtues. So they like the terrifying face. So Christmas for Buddhists, in the words of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, it's not about turning into something or becoming a Buddhist, but about using Buddhism to become a better whatever you already are. So doesn't have to be any contradiction for a Buddhist celebrating Christmas. No problem. No contradiction. We can incorporate all of it. And really, Jesus is a universally recognized bodhisattva. That's right, because Buddha thinks Jesus is awesome. Yes. Yes. So there are, you know, of course, lots of philosophical discussions between Buddhism and Christianity, but in terms of practice and in terms of recognizing another great being, clearly, and the parallels between Jesus' life and Buddha's life are so similar because both of them came into an established system and completely radicalized it. So Buddhists respect Jesus, the life of Jesus, the whole message of Jesus, for sure. But also Buddhists recognize that Christmas, which goes back way before Christianity, it's a universal celebration that can be incorporated into Buddhism. Generosity, peace, harmony, goodwill, all of that. That's all the tenets of Buddhism. So, yeah, in practice, you see, in the practice, it's so very similar. It also means that as a Buddhist, then you don't have to succumb to the materialism. You can actually take the real spirit of the season, which is what Christians also want to do, the real spirit of the times, generosity, caring for all, love for all. So, yeah, the six perfections and light offerings, one of the biggest things that Buddhists do is offer lights, and here they all are, so we're offering them. Oh, that's excellent. Great timing. So, you know, and then we have our Christmas community puja. So that's on Christmas Eve. And, you know, so that's pretty much for the that's our Lungri Tumpa Centre way of having an orphan's Christmas, especially for those that don't necessarily have anyone to celebrate with, to then be able to have a feeling of community. So I think that's going to be online as well as in person. So it's going to be... That's my practice of concentration right there, I tell you. Our dedication, let's dedicate that when Jeanette puts up her Christmas tree, that it becomes a glowing light and an inspiration for all in her family, and that it reminds them of all of those deeper, meaningful things of unbiased love and compassion and developing wisdom, and that that way Jeanette can be like the shining light in her family, and we all can be the shining light in our family, that all of the Christmas trees and presents and Christmas dinners that we prepare, may it be an offering not just to those people but to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as a way of accumulating the vast store of merit that we need to become fully enlightened, to become awakened, just like the Buddha did, so we can really help all sentient beings. So let's dedicate in particular that everything that we do at Christmas, we do with this bodhicitta motivation, with this big attitude, so it becomes a cause for the liberation of all, and never a cause for samsara. So may we dedicate to become ourselves like a light in the world. May we become enlightened so we can perfectly help others in whatever way that they need, so that we can become like the ultimate Santa. May we ourselves be the ultimate Santa. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you.